From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA. Sometimes you can forget what it's like to be a teenager, dreaming about all of the possibilities of an unencumbered youth. And then there's the reality of being a Latino youth in America today. We call them the new underground undergraduates.
There's no actual career. Like, I wanted to be a math teacher, but even to be a teacher, I wouldn't be able to do that.
On today's program, I sit down for an intimate conversation with three Mexican immigrant teens, a moving conversation about their identities, their dreams, and their fears. And a profile of Mexican rocker Jimena Sariñana. Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community is Lakshmi Singh, newscaster with National Public Radio. Hey, Lakshmi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Maria. Thank you for having me.
All right, so this week we're going to take a look at the immigration front, specifically raids, immigration raids, and very specifically the federal immigration agents that detained workers from the Action Rags plant in Houston, Texas. What happened with this incident here?
Well, more than 160 people who were suspected of being undocumented immigrants were rounded up during a recent raid at a used clothing plant in Houston. And the raid at Action Rags USA was one of the largest in Houston in, I think, nearly 2 years, and involved as many as 200 immigration and customs agents. ICE says that a criminal investigation is underway into the company's hiring practices, but it is uncertain if anyone in management has been held accountable. I mean, we know as of the end of June, several plant workers were being detained while agents tried to determine their immigration status.
So the situation is that more and more of these raids are occurring. Many people are asking the question about what's happening to the employers. So what is, in fact, happening to the employers, Lakshmi?
That is the question of the year, I think, this election year. There's still a lot of skepticism that Washington will come down hard on employers who hire undocumented workers. I mean, the debate over comprehensive immigration reform highlighted employer accountability and stronger enforcement of immigration laws that were on the books. And the White House, you know, had announced, 26 initiatives boosting those laws that include one that if an employer could not match 10 or more Social Security numbers to their workers, that the employer would be hauled in. But one of the immigration experts I spoke with from Brookings Institution here in Washington said that that initiative was blocked in October of 2007 by a federal court judge. So not much has been done. I mean, a lot of advocates and sort of non-policy experts believe that they're going to keep hearing more debate on employer accountability, and that lawmakers are going to be keeping that debate alive, but that it's too costly politically to do anything right now because it is an election year.
So we get the benefit of not a lot of action. All right, let's talk about what's been happening in one specific town that we've been following, the town of Postville in Iowa. There was a huge raid. Many were convicted of federal felony charges. And it's now a town full of tension. We're hearing stories about immigration agents that are in plain clothes, who are following immigrants, some who are wearing these GPS ankle bracelets. Bring us up to date on what's happening post-immigration raids in Postville, Iowa.
Well, it's not exactly a post-immigration raids just yet, at least according to some immigration experts I talked to who've been sort of on top of this story. Apparently, a lot of people in Postville are still very much on edge. And one of the big concerns is what happens with the children, parents who were arrested in these raids, who have either been deported or are threatened with deportation. And this is a town, you know, that cannot afford to lose workers. That's something that, you know, local leaders in and around Postville are really worried about. You know, workers were charged with identity theft, you know, Social Security fraud and illegal entry into the U.S. U.S., among other criminal charges. And in previous raids, you know, typically you were charged with sort of administrative violations, not so much federal criminal charges. But I'm hearing a lot of people talk about this as sort of a witch hunt, you know, keeping the enforcement alive. And some, you know, Bush administration officials, they were not named, but I was seeing in reports that they felt that this was happening, this crackdown on undocumented workers was happening because there was no agreement, no passage of comprehensive immigration reform.
But nothing happened to the industry per se then?
Nothing happened to the industry. And so it was interesting that agriprocessors, out of all of this, seems to have been let off the hook, at least for now. And nobody knows what to make of this, because management has not been punished, held accountable in any way in all of this. And yet you have hundreds of people who have either been deported or are threatened with deportation.
All right, Lakshmi, thanks for bringing us up to date. And thanks for being on the show.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Lakshmi Singh reports for National Public Radio in Washington. It's Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa, and I'm also a Mexican immigrant. These days, there are a lot of negative connotations, a lot of negative imagery that gets tied into that label of being a Mexican immigrant. But when I came to the United States, I was very little, and growing up, it was just one part of who I was. I was a Mexican, but I was also a Southsider, a High Parker, a Chicagoan, then a New Yorker. I basically was able to pursue my dreams and become who I am today. So, how have things changed for Latino teens who are Mexican immigrants in the United States now? Anti-immigrant sentiment is on the rise, and that hostility is having a profound effect on immigrants, both documented and undocumented. So, how different from my own is the experience today for young Mexican immigrant teens? Erica, Nancy, and Alina are three Mexican immigrants who grew up in Queens, New York. All three graduated from LaGuardia High School for the Performing Arts, the prestigious public school, just last weekend. But before they took that step into adulthood, I invited these three young artists into my home where we could talk about their lives and their dreams for the future. So bring me up to speed, like for a young Latino in New York or a young Mexican in New York, like how often are you guys talking about where you're from, or how much does it matter where you're from? If you're from Mexico, if you're from Ecuador, if you're from Puerto Rico, if you're from Dominican Republic, do people talk about it or no?
I'm Erica. I don't know. It's never been like, oh, where are you from? Like, are you Mexican or not? I don't know. Like, I never think about where people are from. I'm just like, oh, hello, nice to meet you. And, like, every time I have friends or something, and my sisters are always like, oh, where's she from? And I'm like, I don't know what country they're from. I'm sorry. I just know that that's her name, and that's it.
Because it doesn't...
It doesn't really matter to me, you know?
Does it really even matter if you're Latino or not Latino? Like, is being Latino something that you identify with somebody else because they're Latino, or yes or no? Or
I suppose it depends on the situation you're in, because in, I don't know, I suppose we hang out more with Latinos in our school. I guess that's just like a magnet that pulls us together. It's not like intentional or something, because we have other friends that are from everywhere in the world. So, yeah.
So what about you, Alina? So for you, being Mexican is a big deal, and you like to talk about that.
Yes, it is. Well, me personally, I really like to just speak a lot about other people. Like, I like to know where they're from. For me, on the contrary with Erica, I would ask you, I was like, where are you from? You know, because I want to know. I'm always curious. I'm a curious person. I want to know, you know, I feel like me personally, I'm very proud of what my heritage is. And I feel people should be like that too. You should never, you know, completely erase your past, because from it, you end up learning from it, you know. For example, if I were to, I started this year, I finally met Bolivians. I never met Bolivian in my life. So I'm like, what else do they have? And then to me, so I'm like, okay, so we were having a conversation with Graciela the other day. And I was like, oh, you know, for Mexican, all you need is frijoles con tortilla and you're good, right? Queso y crema on the side, that's good. But then she's like, there's no frijoles in Bolivia. I was like, then what's your diet? And then she's like, and she told me something. I was like, she's like, it's kind of like a bean, but there's no beans, like, practically in Bolivia. I'm like, I'm just...
There's no sense in the world.
There's no sense in the world. Me is frijoles y tortillas. Si no tenemos nada en la casa, if we have nothing at home, at least we have beans and tortilla. That's it. Oh, my God. It was the weirdest conversation in my life after that.
Oh, my God. What about for you, Nancy? Can you tell me what your mom and dad do and how long they've been living here and where they came from?
My dad has a little more than my mom, but they have about 20 years in this country. And my mom, she has been a dry cleaner lady for her whole life. Yeah. And my dad has been a cook, a chef.
And what did your parents tell you about why they ended up here?
I think like many people, it's the poverty that they live over there. And my dad's father was alcoholic, so he was the man of the house. Like, he literally began working in construction in the city at the age of 10.
In Mexico City?
Yes. Like Alina says, like, the only thing that they found in their house was beans and tortilla. Not because it's only because they couldn't afford it. I mean, they could barely sustain the family.
So when you hear people on television say things like, you know, these Mexicanos, these immigrants, they come without papers, and they don't change, and they want to change the United States, and they want everybody to speak Spanish, and they don't want to learn, and they don't want to integrate, and they don't want to assimilate. What goes on for you, Nancy?
I think it's that they don't know how to be human, because I've translated throughout my whole life for my mother and father in school. You know, till this day, they haven't learned English, but it's not because they don't want to. It's because they never had the time, because they came here straight to do what they had to do, work. And bring some money into their homes.
You know, as you're seeing yourself, I mean, what do you call yourself? Do you call...
I'm a Mexican-American.
Yeah. Do you call yourself a New Yorker?
Yes, I do. I go to Mexico. I used to go every summer. This is the first summer I don't go to Mexico. And I'm tearing, but I have to do it because money is really tight right now. But to me, Mexico is like an escape. From this place. I love New York. I love the noise. I love the commotion. And when I go to Mexico, it's either in a little pueblito where my grandfather lives.
Which is where?
Okay. Chocolate de Tapia, Puebla, Mexico.
Say it again.
I can't say it. That's the worst part. Chocolate de Tapia.
Chocolate de Tapia. And what do people look at you and think and say? And what does that do to you?
The worst part is that This is what hurts me, because I'm a very proud Mexican. Maybe I don't know so much of the culture, but I'm proud. It's just like, I'm proud to be I'm from Mexico, and from what I know, I'm very proud of it. But when you go to Mexico, they see you, they call you a gringa, and that hurts. Because you're like, get to know me a little, and then see how gringa I am, you know?
When you think about the fact that there's this whole identity game, you know, you're not Mexicana, you're gringa, you're not gringa, You're a New Yorker. You're not a New Yorker. For you as a young person, like, what does it all say to you?
To me, it's frustrating because you have to identify yourself. Maybe sometimes people won't ask for it, but they will unknowingly. They will ask, who are you? What are you? And I can say I'm all of them. I'm Mexican, I'm American, I'm Mexican-American, I'm New Yorker, I'm a Latina, I'm a Hispanic, somewhere, you know? And I am me, and those are all the elements that make up me.
So what about you, Erica? Everybody's talking kind of about where they're from. I wonder if when you're listening to your friends, if you're always thinking about the fact that there's something that makes you very different than them.
I mean, it's only been recently, like this year, more. Because it's going to be a lot harder for me to follow, you know, my education and all. I'm a really good student, so, like, but then this year, I was just, like, gave up.
Oh my God.
But not just because it's senior year. I'm like, well, what am I going to get out of it, you know?
Because you just, the realization was like, look, without papers, you'll never be able to get a scholarship.
Basically.
And without a scholarship, there's just no way that you could even think about paying for college.
Yeah, and it's so weird because, like, my brother and my sister have gone through all of this already, you know?
Well, how do you think you did in school this year then?
I could have done a lot better, but I mean, I didn't fail anything, and I'm like maybe 89. But to me, like, anything like below a 90 was always like failing to me because I could do like 100, but you know. I could do 100.
You totally could.
What's it like for you guys when you see what's going on for Erica?
To me, it's... Honestly, you never even told me this.
Yes.
Yo, I'm sorry.
We're and just shocked to see you are.
Yeah, because you never told me this. Okay. You never decided to communicate with me about this. And it breaks my heart because you're now like the second person that I know. Now I know is going through this. I have my friend that I adore. And she's not legal. And she's also like you. She has 90 average or and above. I don't know exactly.
Well, when you think about what Erica might face in her life versus what you face in your life as two proud Mexican New Yorkers.
It breaks me because I know that Erica, you have better grades than me. But when I think of you and I think of my other friend, it's just, it breaks me because I have the opportunity to do whatever I want in this country. But I take it for granted. While my two other friends, they don't have the opportunity. They wish they had that opportunity.
And when you think about what Erica faces, Nancy?
Yeah, it pushes me to fight for those things that keep our people from moving on. Because knowing Erica, she's amazing. And it breaks my heart to think that's what she thought this whole year. Because I never saw her. We literally just found out right now that was her status. And, you know, it's... All of us were always talking about going to college, being accepted already, you know, moving on, but always keeping in touch. And knowing that she won't have... She thinks, because we're definitely going to fight for her. That's crazy.
She laughs about it a lot,
yeah.
Right?
That's Erica.
That's Erica.
That's Erica.
What are you going to do, Erica? What's your plan?
For now, I have a job. I'm going to start, like, in a week. And I'm just saving up. Then I'm going to pursue whatever. And one of my friends, who's a chiropractor, has offered to pay for my education.
So you have hope?
Yes.
You know, is there something for you to do? I mean, is it like, well, I guess I should go back to Mexico?
At some point I thought about that, but I don't know. I'm not sure yet. Like, there's no actual career. Like, I wanted to be a math teacher. But even to be a teacher, I wouldn't be able to do that. So, yeah.
Erica, Alina, and Nancy graduated from LaGuardia High School for the Performing Arts in New York City last weekend. Although she's undocumented, Erica does have plans to start college with her friends this fall. In our update at the end of the summer, we'll fill you in on what happens with these three teens as they prepare to set off for college. And in a minute, a profile of Mexican rocker Jimena Sariñana. No se vayan. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The Latin Alternative Music Conference is being held this week in New York City. It's not just a conference for industry insiders. LAMC is a week-long series of concerts open to the public in the Big Apple, and it's become a launching platform for up-and-coming musicians from all over Latin America who are interested in getting attention in the U.S. music market. Among the musicians performing at the LAMC this week is a young singer from Mexico named Jimena Sariñana. Contributor Beto Arcos caught up with Jimena before the conference and sent us this profile.
Jimena Sariñana grew up as an actor in Mexico City, the daughter of the respected film director and producer Fernando Sariñana. But this year, Jimena embarks on a parallel career as a singer with a new approach to pop music and with a debut album titled Mediocre. But Jimena's music is anything but mediocre. What stands out immediately on this album is the production quality. Jimena credits the work of two producers, Tweety Gonzalez and Juan Campodónico, who have already made a mark in the Latin pop world, working with Argentina's Gustavo Cerati and Uruguay's Jorge Drexler, respectively. Jimena says it was a dream to work with both of them.
I listened to Gustavo Cerati's last record, Ahí Vamos, and I was very fascinated by the production. I'm a huge fan of Jorge Drexler, and especially of Jorge Drexler's sound in the albums, that it's everything, that all the instruments sound so beautiful and so organic, and I was very intrigued by this.
Jimena also spent time at the world-renowned Berklee School of Music in Boston, learning about jazz composition. And there are indications that the time spent there paid off, as in this song called Pocas Palabras, or Few Words, with clear jazz influences.
Jazz has definitely influenced me very much. It's a genre that I studied a lot, and it's a genre that I think it's really rich, not only in theory, but also it has amazing singers that I've really admired, you know, like Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald, and it was a music that really appealed to me and that I wanted to study further and maybe try and perform it, you know, in Mexico.
Learning how to perform jazz, Jimena says, was perhaps her biggest challenge. But there's no doubt that jazz has given her the preparation she needed to make this record. As for the acting career, Jimena says she will continue working in films. She's already acted in 11 features so far. She says her music career is not going to prevent her from making movies.
I was raised to try and do the things that I like to do. And that's what's amazing about both of my careers, is that they're the two things that I enjoy doing the most. So I couldn't really separate one from the other. So I think I want to continue doing both of them.
With this debut album, scheduled for release this month, and her showcase at the Latin Alternative Music Conference in New York this week, Ximena is bound to become the buzz of the Latin music scene. For Latino USA, this is Beto Arcos in Los Angeles.
Let's imagine for a second what will happen in 2050 when Latinos and hyphenated Latinos will get to be the majority. The bankrupt notion of the melting pot has been replaced with a model that is more germane to the times, that of the menudo chowder. According to this model, most of the ingredients do melt, but some stubborn chunks are condemned merely to float.
Commentator Guillermo Gomez Peña.
Let's imagine for a moment a post-colonial, robo-baroque Esperanto composed of five European languages, computer talk, Latin, Nahuatl, and Chicano slang. ¿Cómo sería esta lengua extraña? Aló Fortres Europa, Jeste Mexicankin Artenston, asken si quieren jodersen. I wonder qué would happen if when do open your computer, fin de aine message, in esta lingua poluta e disoluta. Nor est englando, no est germano, nor hispano, tampoco franzo, nor even spanglish esse. No est caine non lingua habe du understand. Merde, what happened so? Habe your computer aine virus catched? Habe du sudden BSEG developed? Okay. No. Du es el sendo la nu europees lingua de Europanto. Uno ciber melanjo mas avec la chicanoización del mundo. I say, je n'ai rien a declarer. El arte nunca será suficiente. Translation: art is just a pretext for...
Guillermo Gomez Peña is a writer and performance artist based in San Francisco. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Thanks for listening. We had help this week from KQED in San Francisco and Lily Percy in New York. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world, at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.